Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
Well, it's a very busy Friday morning here in the nation's capital, as is usually the case. But we'll launch you into the weekend the right way. It's 8:07. Thanks for joining us on O'Connor and Company. Larry O'Connor here with Patrice Onwuka alongside all morning. Happy Friday, Patrice.
TGI Black Friday.
That's right. Friday the 13th. Coming up at 8:35, Andy Puzzer will join us, talk about what's next for the inflation problem and whether we do see some horizon here on the baby formula shortage. That's all coming up. But first, I think the concept of a black hole has always sort of been technically a theory because, well, unless you can actually see it, it's hard to really know for sure, right?
There are some things that are invisible. Like true, gravitational pulls.
True that. True that. and certainly the concept of a black hole is in some way related to those gravitational pulls and such. I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's okay, Larry. We've got an expert who does.
Exactly. Let's bring in the Harvard astrophysicist, shall we? Also with the Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, Michael Johnson. And I guess my point is now you guys have actually seen one. You've got an image of a black hole. Explain this to me.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. So black holes emit no light at all. And in fact, if light comes too close to them, it gets completely trapped. So black holes just have so much mass concentrated in such a small volume that if you get too close, nothing can escape. So that's why they're called black holes. But the thing is, they pull things towards them. And so if gas is moving towards them, it can get very hot and glow brightly. And so what we look for is a very, very bright region of the space-time near a black hole where the black hole has a telltale signature, which is that it casts a shadow on the background. So we see in these images basically a donut, this bright glowing gas with a hole in the middle right where the black hole is sitting.
So this is a fascinating image. And Larry and I were talking about it earlier, what we see in the image. But can you describe it to our listeners?
Yeah, so the first image we ever made of a black hole was in 2019. The black hole in the M87 galaxy, and it looks sort of like an orange donut.
Uh-huh.
And then just yesterday, we published the first ever picture of the black hole at the center of our own galaxy, the center of the Milky Way. And that one's even more uniform. So it's this sort of bright ring with some bright blobs around it and then a dark central region.
What are the three bright blobs? And of course, we'll put this out on our social media so you all can see what we're talking about. What are those three glowing bright orbs?
Yeah, so that's one of the most exciting things. We don't know, actually. So one thing about the way we make a picture is that we use telescopes spread all over the world, and then we combine their data in a computer to make the image. So it's sort of a computational telescope. It's not like your phone where, you know, you just pointed something, click, and it spits out a single image. So there are many different images that are all consistent with our data. Wow. So some of them have these bright knots in the image, and others don't, and so it's really exciting for us. We have to, you know, build better telescopes to understand whether they're really there.
Typical in science, you answer one question and then you have 100 more questions, right?
Exactly.
But this is a black hole. We can see this image now, and this is in the center of the Milky Way. Tell me how the Event Horizon Telescope was harnessed, and the power of that telescope was harnessed to be able to finally obtain this image.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Event Horizon Telescope is not one telescope, but it's actually 8 telescopes spread all over the world. So each of these telescopes is recording radio light. And then what we do is we synchronize all of that radio light. So each of the telescopes has an atomic clock that's measuring the time very, very accurately. Then we take all the data back together. We collect it all at a supercomputer, and we look at correlations between every pair of telescopes. So we see if the telescopes are seeing similar ripples of electromagnetic waves. And it turns out that encodes the image of the source for us. It's this sort of miracle of a technique called interferometry. that we can create the synthetic telescope that's as big as the Earth.
Wow, Michael, this is fascinating. Mm. And I'm sure it wasn't just one or two people behind this. You talked to us about the manpower that was involved in kind of creating and collecting all this information, then creating the image that we're getting to enjoy right now.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge team. It's more than 300 scientists across the world. Every telescope has their own team just to make that one telescope work. We have teams that try to coordinate the observations, teams that have to process the data, teams that work on making images from the data, and then a huge team that's doing simulations and theory work to try to make sense of what on Earth we're seeing. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely, this is not a single-person project, and the huge team is part of what makes it such a fun project to be part of.
Well, and Michael Johnson, you're part of that team, so it must have just, you know, what a euphoric moment when you finally saw this image after all of this theory and all of this work, so congratulations to you. Sadly, you know, you're dealing with a radio host here, so the depth of my knowledge here is pretty much science fiction stuff. But my memory is that the black hole concept and theory was also sort of interrelated with Einstein's theory of relativity and time and space and gravity and all of those things. Is the ability to see this image and see how it operates and interacts with gravity and light, does this in any way sort of validate or invalidate what Einstein was looking at there?
Absolutely. And I should say, if you have a question, it's probably deep. I mean, you have the same questions about the image that I do, staring at it for years. And so Einstein created this entirely new theory of gravity. But he's not the one who predicted black holes. It was actually someone else who took his equations and said, hey, you know, if this is really right, then there should be these compact objects that trap everything, including light.
I see.
And Einstein didn't believe it for decades. And, you know, until his death, he didn't believe that black holes could exist. And physicists also, you know, we always just assume, yeah, something's broken in the theory here. Something will step in and say these can't exist. But it's only with, you know, all this observational evidence, looking at the sky and actually seeing them in the universe, and we can start to say, oh my gosh, you know, these things are real. They're actually out there. They're in our own galaxy.
That's very cool. And in terms of Einstein's general theory of relativity, though, I'd read somewhere on this that this doesn't actually disrupt what he theorized 100 years ago.
Yeah, so what's really exciting about this is that we see stars orbiting around the center of our galaxy. They're being whipped around by something that's completely unseen. Some incredibly big object is causing them to go in these loops. And that told us exactly how big this black hole should be. So then if Einstein's right, this black hole should be casting a shadow, and we knew exactly how big the shadow should be. And that aligned perfectly with our image.
Oh, wow.
So it's an incredible validation of Einstein's theory to zoom in and see exactly what he would have expected.
All right, so I got to ask, if you shoot a probe or something into a black hole, where does it go?
Yeah, so this is one of these miracles of general relativity, but you know, to the probe, it'll just march right into the black hole. If you're on the probe, you'll fall in and then, you know, suffer a horrible death.
So
outside the black hole. Yeah, please.
So it's not like you don't go in, you just get destroyed. It doesn't actually, you don't end up, there's nothing at the bottom of the hole.
Yeah, so it depends on the kind of the black hole. Little black holes will tear you apart. We call it spaghettification. Your feet. If you're falling towards the black hole with your feet actually feel more gravity than your head, so it stretches you out, and it would be terrible.
Please. Are there experiments planned to actually shoot something with a camera or something that can send us back images before it gets destroyed?
So for the black hole that we took a picture of, you know, our local black hole, this is still about 27,000 light years away.
Oh. Okay.
So even if
Not
you sent
close.
A probe at the speed of light, yeah, we wouldn't get to see it.
Well, Johnson, just invent warp speed, for God's sake. Come on, man. What are you waiting for?
Exactly. That's our next press release, actually.
Okay.
So,
well, you know exactly where to go to get it broadcast. Michael Johnson, again, congratulations. This really is fascinating stuff,
is.
And I appreciate you,
so
you joining us.
Thanks so much.
You bet. It is 8:15 WMAL traffic and weather every 10 minutes. First on the fives, here is Lisa Baden and the Hadid Carpet Queen. Patrice Onwuka, I have been very open with the world about my hair loss.
You have, Larry. Yeah. Thank you for sharing it with us.
It's really the most courageous thing I've ever done. Actually, it's not entirely true. I hid it for a long time. It wasn't until I actually had my miraculous hair restoration from PAI Medical Virginia. And then I said, oh, yeah, I was totally bald. But until then, of course, like most men, I wore baseball hats. I would do the comb over. I'd do all these things. Because it's embarrassing for men to lose their hair. It just is. I don't know why we have this social stigma, but I know a lot of dudes, like, they see they're losing their hair and they shave their head and then, you know.
Yeah, and they go bald, which is very attractive to a lot of women, too, you know.
Well, okay, I hear that all the time.
It's true.
Let's just be clear here. Bald men are attractive to women if, from the neck down, they look like Bruce Willis or The Rock or you know, I mean, it's one thing to be bald and chiseled, okay? It's another thing to be bald and, well, normal, average.
Okay, yeah, I hear you. But if you have a great personality, then that gives you a couple of extra points.
Trust me, ma'am, I've been counting on that my whole life, okay? Even before I lost my hair. Well, apparently, the men of the United Kingdom who are losing their hair, and if you take note of our British friends across the pond, a whole lot of them lose their hair, certainly in the royal family.
Yeah. There's
a lot of bald men in Britain, okay? And apparently they are a little fragile about it. They don't like to be referred to as bald, and so the UK has has now instituted new employment HR criteria that suggests if you call a man bald on the job or in your work relationship, that is constituted as sexual harassment. It's equivalent to commenting on a woman's breasts.
Wow.
of all
of the things that a panel of judges could decide about the relations in the workplace between men and women, to say that baldness is somehow an immutable characteristic is really interesting.
Well, apparently a guy got fired and one of his supervisors called him a fat, bald C word. In England, they use the C word very differently than we use here.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But it's not a curse word or a swear word?
It is, but it's not so verboten as it is here.
Okay.
Okay. That said, you would think being fat or being the C word is enough for harassment. No. It was the bald thing that this guy was upset about. He's like, hey, I may be fat and I may be a C word, but I don't you call me bald. So he sued for sexual harassment, and he specifically he hinged it on the bald thing because it's like, hey, you wouldn't call a woman bald because women, for the most part, don't lose their hair. So the fact that you singled out the fact that I'm bald, that means you're harassing me and disparaging me because I'm a man. And he won. He won.
I don't get it. Maybe the court really wanted just to set some sort of new precedent here, because I would think calling someone fat in the workplace is degrading. I would think calling them the C word is offensive.
Yeah.
But apparently calling them, but bald is, it's not even a pejorative. It is a descriptive word. You're bald, meaning you don't have hair.
It can be used as a pejorative, let me just say. You know,
blonde, yes. Oh, you're a blonde. But bald? Yes, you're a bald? No. I mean,
think in this context, he meant it as an insult. You're a fat, bald C word. I mean, that, you know.
I think they just threw the bald in there just because the guy probably had feelings over his hair loss.
Well,
that's personal. That's not elevating it to a level of class distinction here.
The judge said that in the same way that you can only a woman will have to deal with comments about her breasts because only women have breasts, although that's, you know, in question these days. In the same token, only men are bald, and therefore, if you point out their baldness, that is tantamount to sexual harassment on the equal level of commenting on a woman's breasts.
No way.
There you go.
No way. There are many women who lose their hair. It's actually scientific, and it has nothing to do with gender ideology. Women actually do lose their hair.
Just ask Will Smith. That's right.
I guess
Chris Rock would have been better off talking about Jada's boobs. It is 8:22 WMAL. I do have an update. We're going to speak with Andy Puster in a moment about the baby formula shortage. But listen to this, Representative Kat Kamick yesterday in the House.
Moms are struggling going from store to store to store, and then the stores are actually capping the amount of baby formula that they will sell them. But, and this got sent to me by a Border Patrol agent this morning and said, this is disgusting. You will not believe this. They're receiving pallets and more pallets of baby formula at the border.
At the border for those crossing our border illegally. The government is sending pallets of the formula there.
Wow.
And you can't get it on our own shelves.
Wow. Moms and dads, take note.
Coming up, Andy Poster on the economy, inflation, and yes, the baby formula crisis next.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.
News now.
.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
8:37 this Friday, the 13th, in the nation's capital. I mean, if we weren't unlucky enough to have to be surrounded by politicians and the federal government, Patrice, throw Friday the 13th on top of that.
And yucky weather. But we will bring the sunshine to everybody's day, Larry.
Yes. A rainy weekend is still brighter and sunnier than a gorgeous work day. Joining us for it. I'm kidding. I love working. Especially if I could work for a guy like Andy Puzder. He, of course, a visiting fellow with Heritage. He's the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, which, of course, you know was Hardee's and Carl's Jr. His book, The Capitalist Comeback, and Getting America Back to Work. Both those books are fantastic. Hey, Andy, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Larry. Good morning, Patrice.
Good morning.
Patrice is so good at sort of taking economic data. You see her all the time on Maria Bartiromo's show on Fox Business, and making it make sense and making it matter. And I don't have that art. That said, there's something very tangible, Andy Puzder, about moms not being able to get formula to feed their babies. And we're seeing these shortages. We're seeing shrinkage. And I'm not hearing anything from this administration. What's happening here?
Well, it's a little hard to tell because this seems like something you would react to, particularly in an election year. I mean, moms can't feed their babies. That sounds like a serious problem to me. And you really don't hear the kind of policy solutions that you'd like to hear coming out of Washington. Even just easing up on import restrictions on formula from other countries, such as Canada, which actually meet our standards but may have problems with labeling or some other bureaucratic technicality. Even easing up on those until we get things back up on, back online here. We've got a plant in Michigan that shut down for health reasons. It needs to get back up. The other plants that are currently producing formula need to up their production. That's going to take some time. But in the meantime, you've got a bunch of hungry kids, and we really need to get, we need a solution. I think allowing other countries to supply us would help.
I think
it really isn't tough. I mean, they just have to say that, right?
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. I wish we had your kind of leadership at the helm of our country right now. Instead, what we're hearing from President Biden is blame game and passing the buck to everyone but himself. I mean, I would love for you to talk about how the United States inflation compares to across this to other countries. I think President Biden has said, well, every other country has inflation right now, but they're not hitting 40-year or near 40-year historic high inflation like we are. Why is that?
Well, we had inflation before the pandemic. We had inflation when he took office. It was about 1.5%.
Mm-hmm.
So saying you have inflation, it isn't really saying very much. If you compare us to the other, to the European nations, for example, in the OECD, you'll see that we both, inflation across Europe, and this includes Canada, inflation across Europe plus Canada, was about equal to where the United States is. And then when they passed that $1.9 trillion spending spree last March, inflation in the United States just soared. I mean, it just surged up. This shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody. Larry Summers was warning that, and he's a Clinton and Obama economist, was warning that if you pass this bill, it's like throwing kerosene on a fire. You're going to ignite inflation, and it did ignite inflation. way above what's happening in other parts of the world. So his statement that we have inflation everywhere is really just an attempt to get around the fact that it has surged way beyond where it is in other parts of the world in the United States because of his spending programs.
Yep.
And Andy Puzder, it was a remarkable thing to see the president speak to this week. And it seemed like he was blaming Republicans for the inflation, or at the very least accusing them of not having a good solution, where, of course, Republicans are in the minority right now. It's not incumbent on them to have a solution. That said, they do have a solution. I mean, is it easy enough to just say, yes, do the opposite of everything Biden has done up until now? Or is it more complicated than that?
No, it's really pretty simple. Right now we have inflation because demand is high and supply is low. If supply were meeting demand, demand could be very high. If we have supply to meet it, there's no inflation. Hmm. So you can do two things. You can either decrease demand, which is painful. Even Jerome Powell said yesterday, this is going to be painful. And we do that by hurting the people who are creating the demand, which are working and middle-class Americans. You raise interest rates, you do the kind of things that stop their spending. The easy solution, and the solution that makes a lot more sense, is a supply-side solution, where you encourage businesses to create more supply, mm-hmm. like Reagan did, like Trump did. You cut taxes, you cut regulation, you encourage domestic energy production, and supply will increase. Well, supply increase doesn't hurt anybody. The problem with this president is that he doesn't have a solution. While Jerome Powell's out there trying to increase interest rates to slow economic growth, Biden's suggestion is that we spend trillions more dollars,
yep.
which would just increase demand. So that's an idiotic solution. And he can't do supply side economics because, my God, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her crew, you know, the squad
exactly.
would come after him with daggers. So he really Republicans have a solution. When we elect a Republican president in 2024, it'll take a little time to fix this, but it is fixable. It's at least if he doesn't screw it up too much more between now
well,
and then.
And you know, also talk about screwing things up. You've got Congress and Democratic members who want to go after, you know, companies like those you've worked with before from an antitrust perspective, and saying, you know, this is about price gouging. Will legislation to end price gouging in the meatpacking industry help, or will it hurt? Which I think it will.
Well, obviously, if you've got meat producers and you want them to produce more meat, you don't regulate them, you don't tax
exactly.
them, you encourage them to produce more meat. You know, and if you look at oil, let's look at oil production for a minute, because that's a big price gouging target of this. What the oil companies do is they sell oil at the market price. The market is set by demand, right? There's huge demand now, little supply, so demand is setting the price. What do you think the government did when it took oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? This is Joe Biden, took oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, announced to the world that he was going to release this petroleum into the system to get prices down. What do you think he did? Do you think he gave it away? He didn't give it away. Do you think he sold it at cost, which is what President Trump paid for it? No, he didn't do that. What he did was he did the same thing the oil companies do. He sold the oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve at the market price. So, so to the extent that the oil companies are gouging, it's the same thing. Biden is doing the same thing and then criticizing them for gouging and blaming them for inflation.
Hypocrisy
knows no bounds.
Great point. And you haven't heard it made very often. That's why we love having Andy Puzder on. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
844. Well, Patrice Onwuka, Metro ridership has just plummeted, partly because of the pandemic, partly because of change in commuting demands due to the pandemic.
That's
also
right.
Partly because people don't trust the reliability
of the Metro,
because
sure.
they still haven't been able to fix problems. They're exploring various ways to entice people back. And, you know, you've got two competing riderships here in the D.C. metro area with regard to taking the train.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the people demand that everybody wear a mask because they're, you know, still obsessed with masks. And the other half refuse to ride Metro if they have to wear a mask, which they don't anymore,
mm-hmm.
Thanks to the judge's ruling in Florida. So how's Metro accommodating both sets? Well, they're exploring the idea of mask-only cars on the train and maskless cars on the train.
So one mask only, and then the rest maskless.
I don't know how it's. I don't know if it's 50-50 or how it how it burns up. But it's sort of like the quiet car on Amtrak.
Exactly, that's what I thought of. Yeah. Although even in the quiet car, you still have people who are yapping on their cell phones. However, you can turn around and curse them out and say, "Hey, get out of here with that conversation."
I've told this story before. I was taking the train up to New York with Andrew Breitbart back in the day, and. He got stopped by TSA for some reason, and they wanted to search his bag, like a random thing. So he said to me, "Go ahead and find us a seat." So I got us seats, and I didn't realize I had gotten the quiet car.
Oh!
And so for the entire trip, I mean, if you could imagine Andrew Breitbart not being able to talk on the telephone for an entire trip and just barely being able to like whisper to me,
wow.
And like, it was torture for him. But yes, that's what we're talking about here.
Well, I like the idea of a mask only car because, you know, you just know if they can identify what car that is and you know where to stand to get onto that car, and everybody else enjoy freedom of breathing the metro air, which, you know, may or may not on a good day smell good, but, you know,
I guess
better than a mask, right?
There's that, either the air in the train or sometimes the passengers riding next to you.
Yes.
And by the way, I don't mean that they stink like they need a bath. I mean, sometimes I'm sorry, but some of the women wear so much perfume.
Oh.
And if I have to get crammed next to them on the metro.
Or men wearing Axe.
Thank you. Honestly, I don't know why men like that smell. Patrice, I have not ridden the metro really since the pandemic. I used to be a daily metro rider, and I haven't yet. So I don't know if this would change my mind or change my behaviors if I knew that I didn't have to wear a mask and there would be no pressure. And everyone who's like, you know, if you're a mask aficionado and enthusiast, you've got your car. You go there. Leave me where I am, I suppose. My bigger concern is this. I was just cleaning out my office. I've got like 5 Metro cards.
with a dollar on them.
Well, it's got some amount. I don't know how much. Are they still good?
You can take them to the machine and put them on a card.
Okay.
Right? I mean, the last time I took the Metro and it was during the pandemic, that's what I did.
And you can consolidate these onto one card then?
Yeah, maybe. But then I know now they're doing, I don't know. I don't know. You might have to just go and visit. I will say, take the Metro. I will say, you know, I've taken it during the pandemic. What would really bring ridership back? Free parking. Free parking at every Metro station. Then people will you know, hold their nose and you know, smell Axe or women's perfume or BO to get downtown for $3.
How about free parking across the district? It sounds like you're backing Trayon White for mayor.
I don't know too much about Trayon, but if he's for free parking in D.C., I might.
He is for free parking, and he's also under the mistaken belief that the Jews control the weather. So it's a mixed bag.
Not that. Never mind. I did not express any kind of support whatsoever. I just am open to new ideas.
No, you're stuck. You're stuck, Patrice. 852 on O'Connor and Co. Well, thank you, Patrice. As always, a great Friday with you, and I hope you have a fabulous weekend.
Thank you. You too, Larry.
You know, I know I'm going to have a fabulous weekend. You know why? Because
why
I'm going to start right now listening to Chris Plant.
There you go.
Well, sure, you're off for the weekend now.
Yeah.
9 a.m., the weekend begins. You know, but the trade-off, of course, is that on Monday morning,
exactly.
3 a.m., the week begins.
That's true.
Dun, dun, dun.
You could have this gig if you want, Chris. Who doesn't want to wake up to Plant at 5 a.m.?
We tried that for a couple of weeks. Turned out it was too scary. People are just waking up. I was told, you know, people are trying to find their socks and things.
True.
Maybe this isn't the right.
That's our new motto, O'Connor and Company, a show to find your socks by.
I
love it.
Well, listen, obviously a great deal to get to. Joe Biden, baby milk. The baby milk factory reminds me of Baghdad, Iraq, 1991. I was in a CVS yesterday, and everybody that came in was told, we don't have what you're looking for, including baby formula.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.